Good Wednesday, everyone.
Hello. So, you know, did something happen yesterday? There was like a lot of noise and screaming in my neighborhood. Did something go on?
No, I don't know. You're talking about.
I don't know. Not sure. Oh, I'll tell you what happened yesterday. This was an interesting thing, and I don't know that Liz listens much anymore, but she pointed this out to me, that that 420, and for those of you from very conservative backgrounds, you might not understand the relevance of that day, but it has basically to do with smoking lots of marijuana.
Really?
And it fell on Taco Tuesday. And so yesterday there may have been people that were eating marijuana tacos, which is pretty, that's exciting.
Wait, so do you bake it into the shell or do you put it in the meats or do you kind of like put oil and whip it into the crema?
Yeah.
With a little bit of avocado?
Whatever you want to do.
Well, that was overshadowed because I mean, this is a complexity. So the Derek Chauvin trial, he was judged guilty. Wait,
so
and
all. We haven't introduced ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Well,
on the topic or anything.
Who cares? today we're at part two of talking about what keeps us safe. We're talking about public safety and policing. I'm Mark Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike of the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And we're both Minneapolis people. Yep. Dan lives a couple blocks from where George Floyd was murdered. And I live between where George Floyd was murdered and Government Plaza, where the trial for Derek Chauvin was. So we're kind of in the thick of it. But obviously, I don't know if you can tell, but we're white men. So obviously, like, and I bring that up because we like to talk about what we think about things and we try to include other people's thoughts.
We do include other people's thoughts.
You know, as best we can, because it's we're sharing comments, so it's not a full-on verbal dialogue with people. It's not like not a call-in show or anything, but you know, we're trying to give as much space for the complexity of these things as possible without like trying to act like we've got it figured out. Like we share some things we like to think we have figured out, but this is a great example of like the this trial of Derek Chauvin is a trial within a broken or flawed or messed up system. But within that system, it's like hard not to see like, well, that's good. I don't know if, at least in Minnesota, a cop has never been found guilty for murdering someone while on the line.
Yeah.
And so could this lead to change? Well, that'd be great. But it's not exactly a perfectly executed movement towards justice. It's messy as fuck. And so there's all kinds of messy feelings. I still don't know what to feel or think about this thing.
Well, and one of the, you know, very obvious things about this is to look at the amount of energy that it took to make this happen. Right? I mean, the amount of sheer human psycho-spiritual material effort, thousands of people marching day after day, calling, you know, screaming, shouting, disrupting, to get one white person convicted of a murder that literally everybody could see happen.
Millions, if not more than a billion people saw it. And, you know, I saw the comments. It's just astonishing. Like, I decided to go jump down the Fox News hole on this one. And there's still like people who are adamantly, you know, the same rhetoric about the thin blue line, but then also saying like, people jump to conclusions based upon a doctored video.
Yeah, right.
So this is what we're up against. You know, like it's people still kind of shaping their own messed up realities. And so getting people to be on the same page at all seems nearly impossible. So that the fact that, like, I really honestly did not expect him to be found guilty on all three counts.
Yeah.
We don't know what the sentence is going to be, but it bodes well, at least within the framework of this messed up system. Because I'm an abolitionist, so it's not like I... In a better world, he'd be going to something other than what we think of as jail, right? But it is what it is. The fact that he doesn't get bail, it's all like, at least it signals he is going to be held accountable by the same system that had previously been trying to protect him. But, you know,
yeah,
but
at this, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there is this definite win that was forced upon the system of whiteness by an unbelievable amount of effort. But part of that is what that tells you how entrenched the system of whiteness is, right? That it took that much effort, that it wasn't just, hey, look, we got this video, you know, there's no way I'm going to even try to plead not guilty on this. And, you know, and we're going to be over and done with it. And of course, he's going to be arrested. And, you know, and Kathleen's got a comment here. I mean, without that video, you know, the cops would have covered this up. And we have documentation of that. That's not a speculation.
No, the initial statement from the police was like, the cops responded to a medical emergency. He died. Like, that's really yeah. What it is. Like, they called an ambulance to try to even help out. That was what they initially said.
Yeah. And so so it's very, very clear that it's a very, very clear the way that, the system of policing tried to make this a non-issue and a non-incident and protect these four cops. And how much effort it took to change that. And so, yeah, when we look at the changes that really, I think, need to happen to truly start making everybody feel safe, you know, this is a significant act, but this is one small act. It's great to feel good if you happen to feel good. And certainly yesterday, a lot of people were feeling good. I mean, I was spending some time up at the corner and, you know, people were very happy. A lot of people were very happy and excited. And that's great. A lot of people don't feel particularly good. And that's okay too. Right. And so, you know, this is another part of this, quest for a decent society. You know, can we allow people a full range of responses to anything, right? To anything, without trying to force conformity?
Yeah. Some people feel like they're just worried that this will be used as just a scapegoating thing and the system won't do anything. And in fact, it might make things worse. Some people are excited. Some people are a whole mix of feelings. I'm in a mix. Like, man, that's okay. I feel like we got to allow the range of emotions and also recognize that, like, it's okay to have emotions one day and have them change the next day. And it's okay for people to take a breather and then keep fighting. One thing I don't think is okay is if society as a whole moves on. Like, that's, I think a lot of us can agree on that. But this, you know, some comments coming up that show some of the complexity. Like, also what happened was Makia Bryant was killed in Columbus, right?
Yeah.
And, it says she was 16. I've heard 15. But either way, like, teenager. She had a knife on her, but she was being attacked. And so she's the one who called the police, as far as I understand. And she was killed, okay? And so, like, already, you know, the responses that are going to come up is like she had a knife? Did she have a history with the police? Like, people fall into the same old patterns with this. And it shows that even after the Derek Chauvin trial, like, this stuff is still happening. This is still America. And it shows the stakes. And so if there's going to be a positive outcome from Derek Chauvin's trial, it won't be because people just, how they felt about it, it's what we do next and how society as a whole changes in response to our efforts. And it's scaring people. Like, I read, again, I was in the Fox News hole following all the comments, reading comment sections, and people were upset by how much the trial was influenced by the protests, thinking that somehow this is not how change happens. Of course, Maxine Waters is the devil incarnate for suggesting that if the trial doesn't, he isn't found guilty, that we should continue to agitate. It just shows there's a lot of weight behind this trial for good reason. It shows, exposes something, but for those who have eyes to see, ears to hear, or a non-ableist way of putting that, like, it's an opportunity.
Yeah, and I think that the other piece to this, which we've been seeing very clearly now that everyone's emerging from the pandemic, right, is that, you know, our society and people in our society are just phenomenally formed by violence.
Yes.
That violence, you know, and I've been continuing to watch this series on HBO, you know, Exterminate All the Brutes, which I really can only watch about like 15, 20 minutes at a time.
I haven't started. Like, if people have the juice to watch them like that, I've been in an unpleasant season of depression. I'm tired. Like, you know what the thing is, you know, I feel guilty. Like, it's like, I often feel like I don't have a right to be tired about this justice stuff because, you know, I'm a white dude. But it's heavy. The sort of heavy lifting
very,
that
very heavy.
Someone needs to do in order to dive into this stuff is.
But this is one of the things that the series shows. I mean, among other things, is that, you know, there is just an incredible level of violence that has formed, you know, our society and the societies connected to colonialism and whiteness, and that. You know, and so we can't expect that an institution we call the police, which is involved in, you know, boundary upholding, is not going to also be incredibly violent. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, that's the juice that we're swimming in. And so, you know, that's something else that I feel really needs to be looked at very closely. Like, what, you know, can we even imagine? It's not, to me, it's in addition to, can we imagine a society where we're safe without police? Can we imagine a nonviolent society? You know, and I just don't think that that's something that most Americans really can even wrap their heads around. I mean, it's so endemic. I mean, we talk about these roots and pulling things up at the roots. I mean, the basic root of violence, you know, Thomas Merton talked about our almost innate proclivity towards violence. You know, that's something that really needs to be examined very deeply, I think.
Well, pulling up some comments here, Wiley asks, I missed the last discussion. Did you guys mention the history of American police force and its connection to slavery? Gus responds, no, not really. Though they did an excellent episode on this way back in episode 43. We don't expect
it, Gus.
Like, because he's our freaking librarian, Dan.
Unbelievable.
No, you know, but this is the thing. It is. Gus is impressive in his encyclopedic knowledge of
it's remarkable
things. But
I mean, when you come up with these podcast episodes, like, oh, yes, you know, in episode 27 in 1932.
Yes, I believe if you fast forward to the 15-minute mark or so, they'll be. But it's worth pointing out, like, so, you know, we don't expect everyone to watch all these episodes or listen to them.
Well, wait a minute.
So, well, maybe Dan does. It'd be great if you did. But yeah, so policing, modern American policing, police as we understand it is a relatively modern concept. Of course, you've had gendarmes and military officials like doing protective kind of activities in societies, but like modern policing is modern, and it comes out of largely two roots. One is slave patrols, and the other is union busting. And so this kind of two of the roots.
Well, and the root of the sort of post-medieval sheriff who basically was in the employ of the landowners to help sure. collect taxes.
So none of these roots was we, the government, need to create an institution that protects the average citizen from harm. Like that's not the functioning mandate. And this is important because it shows the logic of like the police already assumes, like the way this was built, that the what we might think of as the regular Americans, from my perspective, like people in the bottom half, were actually the threat.
Right? Well, especially if you're not white. I mean, the people who are not white are a threat, period.
There's racism, yeah. there's classism baked into this, and it's who is being protected from whom is a question we have to stop and ask, because it's not, we're not being protected from exploitative labor practices by the police. Not really. That's not what they exist for. Some of that comes in there because we still have a system where we can elect people who at least somewhat have to do what we say in order to get reelected at some level. And then those people can affect some stuff. But it's amazing. One of the things that's been made clear in the United States, and Minneapolis isn't unique in this, how very little power any of our elected officials really have over the police has become very clear. It's so baked in.
Yeah. You know, for example, one great example of this, if you would like a great specific example to share at game night with your friends. So one of the biggest crimes that's going on in the Twin Cities, and I'm sure in many cities around America, is wage theft. And it's particularly common amongst people who work at sports venues, right? So the people that sell food at, you know, the Twins games and the Vikings games and all of this are constant victims of wage theft. And they're not paid fully for their time. They're not paid for time that they have to sit around and wait for the game to start, but they're told to show up at certain times. I mean, this is like millions and millions of dollars worth of money that's being stolen from the poorest people in the city. I have never seen a cop roll up to the Twins stadium and go to the big box and arrest the Twins owner for wage theft.
Right? No.
In fact, I've never seen a cop be involved in this at all, right? In any way, shape, or form. I've never seen them come to a little hot dog stand and say, pay these people the money that you owe them. So that's a crime that the police are literally never involved with.
And let's just take even a step back. So like if the police do get involved, it's because someone files a complaint. But like, let's imagine that the police approach this stuff like they do their regular patrols. What if they were going to businesses regularly and checking with the owners, like, can I see your books? And they just patrolled around looking for business owners who are cheating their employees. No, they patrol around sketchy neighborhoods, pulling people over for air freshener shit and killing, who are they patrolling and why? It does not represent the greatest number of crimes. We all know this. It's statistically irrefutable. Like, they're not looking for cocaine use in condos. They're stopping in street corners and pulling and picking up people who are hanging out in parks smoking pot and in poor minority type neighborhoods. So who's being protected? What is public safety? Right now, what we have is a myth that the police serve and protect us all, citizens, but really they're serving protecting the property class, property owning class. And so if you start to say, And if you start to ask, like, well, what would it look like? This is where we get a lot of the tension now. Do you just take what we have and try to tweak it, or do you have a major overhaul? And this is why there's been arguments, like, over what the best tactic is. So comments. CK writes, we need to keep filming, please. You know, when you're seeing a police doing their thing, feel free to whip out your phone and start recording. But there's video of so many more killings that go nowhere. This seems to be, in a way, a unique situation. Yeah, so it's amazing that this young woman took the video and it went somewhere, but that's not a guarantee. It's like assuming body cams would be a guarantee. It doesn't necessarily change anything. Gladys writes, I'm happy to see you guys again today and reflecting on yesterday's verdict. Yes, the energy to achieve this result was enormous.
Yeah, it was enormous.
I lived in the Twins. The only thing that rivaled the enormity of, like, the only time I ever saw more people on the street at any one time besides this was when Prince died. And that was like a big party and celebration. So this is a mammoth. It was a mammoth sustained undertaking, and a lot of people are wiped out. Nevertheless, yes, we must keep the pressure going for all these incidents. Ed writes, I was feeling, I'm assuming feeling good, but found out about this. But now I'm grieving over this latest shooting, which has, yeah. Where was the taser? I mean, that's the other thing. We invested all this money in police departments around the country for them to have tasers and non-lethal things, but it didn't really diminish their capacity to do lethal action. So why was this young woman, this teenager with a knife, shot dead? Like, that doesn't make any sense. David writes, the initial MPD statement, two officers arrived and located the suspect in his car. He was ordered to step from his car. After he got out, he physically resisted officers. Officers were able to get the suspect into handcuffs and noticed he appeared to be suffering medical distress. Officers called for an ambulance. He was transported to Hennepin County Medical Center by ambulance, where he died a short time later. Right. Yeah, that's...
So, massive crock of bullshit.
Never mind that. They're the one who put him in distress. Right. Susan writes... if white people want to just move on and don't care to keep talking about the contentious issue of our racist systems, then that's their privilege showing. I'm not saying it's not heavy and hard, and I don't get discouraged too. Just don't say let's move on and stop talking about it without acknowledging this is white privilege. Yes.
Yes.
Wiley's pointing out Gus knows because Gus is a fan. That's help but... You know,
but we're also paying him the big bucks to be a librarian, so that's really
I can't not say something about Pelosi's statement. People are going to defend Nancy Pelosi for just not choosing the right words, but I mean, to me, this shows the zeitgeist of progressive or liberal America, white America. She basically thanked him for dying for our freedoms, is equivalent to that. Like, you paid you sacrificed for civil rights. Like, George Floyd didn't he was murdered. This logic, and this is again this baked in logic of violence in our society. And you could say we're overthinking it, but Christianity has been baked into this idea of sacrificial logic. America yes. takes that sacrificial logic that is already a distortion of what Jesus did and imperializes the fuck out of it by saying that, like, all these people who suffer and die in America, it's for some noble cause, which is all BS. George Floyd didn't die for a noble cause. He was murdered. And a lot of people are, like, pissed off, like, don't keep fucking murdering people. And they agitated. And they didn't want his death to be in vain. But that is, we don't need white politicians thanking him for his sacrifice. That twists the nature of things. And it shows the profoundly violent core of our society that thinks that people can be spent to secure some sort of mythic freedom. So I could go off and I'd get pissed. I'm really upset. Yeah, we don't want to see depressed, ragey Mark. CK says, I have a friend who is retiring from the DEA, and he talks a lot about the horror of gun culture and law enforcement and the violent mentality it creates. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's incredible.
Thanks for pointing this out, Gus. Gus saw that the Mennonite Church USA produced a 9-week Bible study curriculum that's available for free called Defund the Police, an Abolition Curriculum. I know at least one of the people who was involved in crafting that, and it looks amazing, better than I would have expected. Yeah, so I'm surprised at how good it seems, wishing I had the capacity for one more thing. So, you know, if you're not a Mennonite, suck up your pride and check out the Mennonites' resources, because like it's not like there's other denominations out there cranking out abolitionist curriculum. So check it out. And by the way, that's not me praising Mennonites, because, you know, I like to shit on them most of the time. Leah writes, Jessica Pishko is doing great work on sheriffs. Never realized how much power they have with so little oversight.
Yeah, and Gregory Bentley is a great, if you ever want to find out more about sheriffs in the South, is a great resource for this. Yeah, I mean, these people were basically like kings, and still are in some places, and they have their little fiefdoms, and like around Prohibition, you know, they would basically decide who could have the illegal stills and who couldn't, and they charge taxes, and yeah, I mean, it's terrifying.
Last rights, using police even goes back to protecting white colonists from indigenous Americans defending their civilizations. Yeah, as far as I can recall, the first police, a formal police force that actually had employees that were regular police force was in Boston, colonial era. So I'm sure that was part of the mentality for that. And then, of course, you have these informal night watches that were kind of a volunteer or punishment based. That was the other thing. They used being police was a punishment for crimes, and they found out that didn't work very well. So they started having professional law enforcement. But yeah, a lot of it was kind of keeping an eye out for indigenous people. Ed writes, American violence is the sacred unspoken story, and yet spoken through investment and action. And then when we do speak of violence, we talk about it in mythic terms that take the edge off.
Yeah, and again, this whole notion of what keeps us safe, right? So just as one example among many, right? $6 trillion and counting for the war in Iraq. What could you do with $6 trillion that would keep people feeling safe and support people? You know, and this is one of the great hypocrisies that needs very, very serious scrutiny shown on it, right? I mean, whenever you bring up things like schools, employment, living wage, housing, what do you hear? We don't have money for that. Don't raise our taxes, you fucking liberal commie. Then when Governor Walz needs $30 million to create a military occupation of the Twin Cities, suddenly it's like, oh yeah, we got plenty of money. And then when that wasn't enough, they passed $9 million more to bring in cops from out of state to help occupy the city. So there's an infinite amount of money available for violence in America. Infinite amount of money. That $6 trillion for the war in Iraq wasn't even part of the regular defense budget, right? Which has been $600-700 billion a year. Suddenly it's just like, yeah, we got $6 trillion. If you'd said, let's have $6 trillion for people, no, we don't have that money.
That would buy at least 3 trillion pounds of gummy bears if bought in bulk. Just to give people a sense of
just
what they're actually
to
choosing.
Give perspective.
Yeah. No, but here's the thing about violence. Like this is the logic, is that really people with their property should be free to do whatever they want. And if other people don't have as much property or they're suffering or dying, it's their own fault for their choices. And the only real threat is people coming and taking away the stuff that I have. So that's the only legitimate use of violence, and the only thing the government should exist for at all. Like, that really is the naked logic of this. Mm-hmm. you start adding complexity, like, well, how is it, why do you have this property? Like, last time I checked, Europeans didn't inherit this land legitimately. Like, you start asking these questions, and then you start asking, this is why it bothers the hell out of people when you start talking about gun violence as a public health issue, is because then all of a sudden it starts breaking the logic of, I need to have my stuff, it's by my own good choices, and then I should be able to use violence or have the state use violence on my behalf to protect it. And so we have to cover the nakedness of that with all these shitty myths. Gus writes, Wiley, don't tell them I just looked it up by pulling up a second window. I had my suspicions, but I didn't want to take away the mystique of Gus.
Hey, even that, even if I pulled up a second window, I don't know that I could have found.
No, that was still fast. Yeah, don't sell your skills short.
He's got mad skills.
Tyler writes, many people think serve and protect is the law and that law enforcement officers are required to follow. And there's actually a case on this. I think it was even Supreme Court. Like, they don't have to. They don't have to.
No, they actually don't have to.
No, at all. These people don't understand that serve and protect is a marketing slogan. Ding, ding. The job of law enforcement is to enforce laws, and even that selectively.
Yeah, very selective.
It's very freaking selective. Rather than to serve you or protect you. These laws are mainly suited to protect the elite property first and foremost.
Yeah. Okay. So I gotta tell this story. I know we're over time, but I just need to tell the story because it's so perfect. So I grew up in West Los Angeles in a neighborhood that, when I was growing up, it was basically kind of slightly on the upper middle class end of middle class. Now it's a very wealthy neighborhood. Next door to that neighborhood is a town called Bel Air, which is a super wealthy, exclusive.
We all know. We've watched Fresh Prince.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had some friends that knew other people that grew up in Bel Air and had places in Bel Air. And so there was one time that this friend of mine was like, well, let's go over to my friend's house and he's got some Ritalin for his ADHD that he's been prescribed, and let's go take some of this Ritalin. So we go over there. We're sitting in the backyard. And there's a beautiful pool and this huge place. And so we're crushing up this Ritalin and snorting it. And I look up, and there are two cops coming into the backyard. And you know, I immediately
kind of freeze, and
I'm completely freaked out. And the cops come up, and they're like, oh, hi, you know, do you guys live here? One kid is like, yeah, I live here. These are my friends. And they're like, okay, see ya. They turn around and walk away. I'm just thinking to myself, what, like, oh, my God, what is this? Right? Well, in Bel Air, the police don't arrest people for doing things, especially not for doing drugs. Everybody was crushing up something and snorting it. And so laws are enforced very, very selectively. Very, very selectively.
Wiley loves this. America loves its martyrs. That's even if they aren't trying to be martyrs, we'll turn them into them. Heather writes, racism is such a stink, no air freshener of white righteousness will cover. Ain't that the truth? Viv writes, Department of Justice now investigating Minneapolis police practices. Well, I didn't know that. Thanks for telling me this.
Yep.
Announced this morning by Attorney General Merrick Garland. Did you guys announce that yet? And you know, this is due to community activists. No, this is the thing. Like, there's a lot of energy put into this, a ridiculous amount. And it bears fruit. And again, like, people who want to say, well, are still upset over AutoZone burning down, that was part of it.
Yeah.
People, like, they need to know. They're afraid of what will happen if they don't give, the people some of what we're demanding. Yeah. Like, this is how change works in society.
People have a lot of power. And that's one of the things that makes us safe, right, is people exercising our power. That's one of the things that creates safety.
And so, now there's, I'm going to be keeping my eye on this, the Department of Justice investigating Minneapolis police practices. And And I know that by the metrics of things, the Minneapolis Police Department is by far from being even in the bottom half of major metropolitan in its practices. It's like every metropolitan area and then smaller areas has the same crappy practices. So I'd love to have like a little sparkle effect of them starting to look at other areas. Patricia writes, last night, community council discussed the program in St. Paul with the police called Stop For Me to address pedestrian safety, where they pull over and stop cars that didn't stop. Yikes. A simple entrenched example of how dangerous policing makes us all less safe while meeting quotas in the name of safety. This needs defunding. Well, this is kind of messed up. Like, obviously, one of the things I like about St. Paul is that you can kind of walk, you have more confidence walking to cross the street without getting hit by a car than Minneapolis because they take it more seriously. But yes, this becomes a pretext for all kinds of shit. Yeah.
And, you know, another example, and this is related to Dante Wright. So for about the last 7 weeks, I was driving around with expired tabs because the DMV was behind in putting out tabs. And, you know, I'd sent it in and whatever weeks ago, and I just hadn't gotten it. And, you know, was I worried about doing that? No, absolutely not. This should not be a cause of fearing for one's life. And it's obscene.
It is obscene. Gladys says, thank you for your straight talk. I have to go now and keep on keeping on. Thank you, Gladys.
Thank you, Gladys.
Becca says, I'm still stuck by Chauvin's lawyer's defense. The lethal force is what reasonable police officers do. It says a lot about the nature and role of policing as well as the kinds of people who want to fill these roles. I think that we all intuitively feel that lethal force is central to the role of the police. We don't treat them with respect. We appease them because we fear them. And final word.
Final comment, which will make you happy, Mark.
Gummies, not guns, I'm assuming. But I now, next time I'm in anything that's a protest against violence or military or weapons, I'm going to have a sign that says gummies, not guns. And it's,
there you go.
I think there needs to be T-shirts.
T-shirts.
And a whole line of products. Gus writes, consider how different Patricia's mentioned program would be if that was done by Department of Transportation employees instead of cops. Ding, ding, ding. This is the whole point of the defund the police, which isn't even necessarily the abolish the police camp. But the defund the police is the reasonable approach that's moderate, saying there's a shit ton of things that cops do that they shouldn't be the ones doing it. So let's give that money elsewhere. And so we can right size what the police's functions are. And then the abolished side is like, and we should just get rid of the police while we're at it. But to me, this is a very reasonable place for moderate Americans to look at. Exactly what Gus is talking about. There's all whole functions that you don't need an armed person to do. Because that doesn't keep us safe, which is the theme of this week.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you all. Great comments as always. Appreciate you being around. And if you're going to crush up some Ritalin, do it in Bel Air. We'll see you on Friday.
I have some bad news, Dan. I'm not able to be here Friday.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Okay. Well, and I'm not able to be here next week.
So this is goodbye for a while. For a time.
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Most people have signed off already because we're so late, so nobody will know that.
Yeah, nobody will know. But May 3rd, maybe we'll have a May, like a workers theme, because May Day is the workers.
Ooh, yeah.
Who knows great. Where we'll go?
Who knows?
But we'll see you sometime in the future.
If you didn't get your special 420 tacos yesterday, get them today.
It's always 420 in our hearts. See you next time, everybody.